Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents On My Honour by Elizabeth Johns, narrated by Alex Wyndham. Prologue. Vitoria, Northern Spain, June 1813. The Allied Encampment. The grief was so thick in their throats, none could speak. They'd been together for only 2 years, yet the bonds of the battle were forged stronger than any created by blood. It was not something that could be explained, only experienced. When they set sail from England for the peninsula, each had felt invincible, ready to conquer evil and save England. Now it was hard to remember why they needed to be brave any more. There was a chill in the air as they all sat huddled around the fire. James shivered. The silence the night before a battle was eerie, but afterwards it was deafening. Watching the campfire's flames perform their blue, gold and orange dance, it did not seem real that one of them was gone. They had survived Ciudad Rodrigo, Badajoz and Salamanca, yet Peter had fallen before their eyes today. His sabre had been raised and his eyes fierce, ready to charge, when a shot had seared through him. He was on his horse one moment and gone the next. The scene replayed over and over in their minds in slow motion. Memory was a cruel, cruel master. The same battle had left Luke wounded when a shell exploded near him. He had insisted on joining them tonight, issuing the orders of the Sawbones and hobbling out of the medical tent on the arm of his batman, Tobin. Now there were 6 of them left, if Peter's widow was included, and all wondered, was this to be their fate? Someone had to speak and break the chain of their morbid, damning thoughts. Peter would not want this. 4 pairs of morose eyes looked up at Matthias. We all knew this was likely when we signed up to fight Napoleon. How would you want us to feel if it were you? James asked. I would want you to keep going and give my life meaning. Precisely. We mourn this night and move forward tomorrow. His death shall not be in vain, James said with quiet conviction.
I still do not understand how we were caught unawares, unless...
Colin was replaying the scene over in his mind. Someone gave our position away. Luke voiced what they all suspected. We were ambushed, Matthias added. In the end, England had emerged the victor, but it had been a near thing.
What about Kitty?
Peter's wife followed the drum and felt like one of them. We see what she wishes to do. I expect she will wish to return home, Matthias answered. He had known her and Peter from the cradle and was the most devastated by the loss. The French are worn down. This cannot go on much longer, Luke said, though he would be sent home. No one else dared voice such hope. We are worn down, James muttered. Philip, the quiet, thoughtful one, spoke.
If anything happens to me, will someone look to my sister? She has no one else.
I swear it, Colin said, leading the others to do the same. Pietas sed honos. Philip nodded, too affected to speak. Loyalty and honour, another swore the oath in English. They returned to silence, each brooding over what had happened and what was yet to come. Chapter 1. September 1813. Luke walked along the Portsmouth pier to clear his head, despite the cold, damp drizzle, happy to be on English soil once again after months in hospital with a festering wound. Though he would not trade the comradeship forged with his brothers in arms, he was grateful to be home, mostly whole, and now resolved to do his duty. Soldiers and sailors alike stumbled along the cobblestones in drunken revelry, the port full of public houses and taverns to tempt them to further libations. A great many of them had arrived home alongside him, invalided out of His Majesty's service. He made his way toward the George Inn, a fair place to rest before heading to London on the morrow, then on to his estate. Pausing to relax his leg a moment, he leaned heavily on his cane and thought of Waverley, the place which had kept him going for the past 2 years while in the army. Not that he had expected to inherit, but his stupid cousin had found himself killed in a duel. His cousin had been insufferable. It was why he had been dueling in the first place, but he would not have wished for his death. It was true, the notion that you do not appreciate what you have until it is gone. He had refused to leave the war upon inheriting, defying his superior's wishes, but what good was a title if there was nothing left to return to? Just because he had no heir, he had already tired of his responsibilities and wanted to be treated as before, fighting for king and country alongside his fellow man. War was certainly a great equalizer, a necessary one. He was more of a man now, maturity gained that would possibly have taken a lifetime to garner otherwise. He scoffed aloud. If he ever heard any Johnny Raw discuss war as an adventure, he would whip them soundly and save them a good deal of heartache. No one could have prepared him. He felt a lump in his throat at the thought and shook his head. So lost was he in grief that he almost stumbled over something in his path. Stopping abruptly, he peered through the murk. Some brawling drunks were blocking his way forward. When had he begun walking again? He couldn't recall. Clearing his throat, he hoped it was an innocent bout of fisticuffs.
"Pardon me? Mind your own business," was the rude reply.
It was difficult to see what was happening through the dense fog, but Luke heard a whimper and it was distinctly feminine. He felt for the handle of his cane, whilst leaning on his good leg to be ready to draw the sword out if needed. First, though, he tried his best command voice.
"Step away from the woman so I can ensure she is willing."
He heard another muffled plea, sounding like help.
"We found her first," one of the three men growled, and Luke pulled out his sword, leaving no doubt that he meant to protect the woman. Even if she was a halfpenny whore, she was protesting, and that was enough for him. "Step away from the lady."
"This ain't no lady," the short, dumpy one guffawed.
It would be three against one, but Luke had fared worse at Rodrigo and Badajoz and Salamanca, and it was no time for such remembrances. He needed his wits about him. One of the men whispered to the other, and Luke calculated. One would hold on to the woman, and he suspected the other two would try to take him from the sides. He waited for them to make the first move, which was not long in coming. Luke had to admire the bold approach. The largest one came for him head first, and Luke used the butt of his sword to knock him in the back of the head. That drill had been done hundreds of times with a saber atop his battle horse, Trojan, but it was still gratifying with his sword. The other man was small and wily, and Luke saw the flash of a dagger only seconds before it came down. He barely had time to balance and thrust before the dagger sliced into his thigh. Looking up as he pulled his sword out of the prone body, the woman was struggling with her captor. As the final man looked down at the fate of his fellow thug, she took the opportunity to place her knee in a spot which made Luke wince, however he approved of her methods. The fool had made the mistake of looking over to see if he was next. Luke quickly knocked the man senseless and trussed him like a Christmas goose before doing the same to the other two.
"Are you hurt, miss?"
She was breathing heavily and trembling, but he saw a slight shake of her head.
"Where may I escort you?"
"Nowhere," she whispered.
Had they hurt her neck and injured her voice? He stepped closer, and she flinched. She smelled foul, like the Thames at low tide. What had happened to her? Where had they found her?
"I will not harm you."
"You are bleeding, sir,"
she stated unexpectedly, instead of female histrionics. Luke had forgotten about the dagger in his thigh. A similar thing had happened during the last battle, and he had not noticed his injuries until much later, when the fire in his blood had settled. She did have a voice, however, and it was that of a finely bred gentlewoman.
"A doctor should tend to this,"
she insisted, now fretting over him as though he had not just saved her from attack.
"My inn is not far from here. Is there somewhere I can escort you?" he asked again. She shook her head with vehemence. "Miss, I cannot leave you here alone after what has happened."
"We will not discuss myself when you are in danger of bleeding to death."
He sighed deeply. She was a stubborn one. "Very well. The George is up ahead on Queen Street."
Holding out his arm, he gave her a look his subalterns would have known well. She hesitated, but then took it. He was afraid he would lean on her more than she on him. She was wet and shivering, and he could only speculate as to why the latter. The distance to the inn had not seemed so far before. He could feel the blood trickling down his leg and pooling in his boot. By the time they stepped through the door, he was feeling very weak. Would that not be the worst bit of irony, to survive battle and die from a dagger in a dark alley in England?
"Please send for a doctor. My brother has been attacked."
The miss ordered the landlord in the style of the highest lady of the land. In fact, she sounded much like his mother or sister. He had little time to consider that fact before he was ushered into a parlour and a glass of spirits was held to his lips. The lady fussed over him and cleaned his wounds. No female had done any fussing over him since his mother or nursemaid. It felt nice. He looked up at her through the haze of medicinal spirits, and her face was hidden beneath her cloak, making her seem otherworldly. He felt a frown crease his forehead.
Is your rescuer not to know your name?
I am very grateful to you, sir, but I think it best if we remain nameless.
That was not the response he was used to hearing in England. A cold cloth was pressed to his forehead, and he could feel his leg throbbing beneath the makeshift tourniquet she'd applied.
Given names, then. I am Luke.
Only between you and I.
She finally looked up at him enough so he could see her eyes, as pale as ice, and a small wisp of hair that looked like spun gold.
Word of a gentleman.
Her gaze narrowed upon him, and he could see she almost changed her mind.
I am Meg,
she said at last, so quietly he barely heard.
Meg, he whispered, as though the name was sacred.
She smiled at him, and he knew he would take 100 more stab wounds to see it again. He reached out and grazed his fingers along the bruise darkening on her cheek. Then he took his dampened handkerchief from his brow and held it to her wound. The tenderness in her eyes almost made him forget himself. A knock on the door interrupted the intimacy, and his bad man Tobin entered with the doctor, the dreaded Sawbones.
"'Tis what happens when you take the air."
Tobin shook his head and muttered curses before pouring enough whiskey down his throat to sauce an entire regiment. Luke's last coherent sentence to Meg was,
"'I will return you home after I am shown up.'
Meg waited in a bedroom and could hear the soldier's groans from the adjoining parlour while the doctor was sewing the cut. She felt horrible for leaving the man in such a state. In fact, she almost took the chance to stay until he was recovered. He was hurt because of her, after all, but she could not risk anyone discovering her. He was an officer and a gentleman, and his man and surgeon were seeing to him, so there was little more she could do. He was in God's hands now. She would say prayers for her rescuer every day for the rest of her life. When she thought of what had almost happened at the hands of those vile ruffians, bile began to rise in her throat. She would have to learn how to repel such advances, though, since she was no longer to be a lady. Adding sins to her guilt, she borrowed some coins from the gentleman who had been so kind to save her. One day she would repay him if it was the last thing she did. Leaving him a note of apology, she ripped off her locket and left it in exchange, since she had no idea where to pawn it. Offering a hasty prayer again that she was not taking from someone in need, she consoled herself that he had not seemed so.
"Please let it be enough,"
she whispered, looking at the locket one last time. Prying open the window, she looked down at the ground below. The room faced the stable yard, and no one seemed to be about. It would not be long before her absence was discovered and they came looking for her. All she cared about now was getting as far away from Portsmouth and the vile Mr. Thurgood as was possible. There was a small wooden foothold over a doorcase between her room and the ground, and she lowered herself to it. It was not easy to be a villain in skirts. Once steady, she made the final leap to the ground. It jarred her ankles, but the pain eased after a few moments. Now she had only to hide until Thurgood's ship set sail, or she found transport away from this place. Could fortune smile upon her, and her absence not be discovered until the ship was far out to sea? Ha! When she awoke on the ship and realized she had been drugged, she had pleaded illness and begged the servants to leave her undisturbed. Perhaps the after-effects of the drugs had made her bold, but her only thought had been to get away. This time she skirted the shadows until she was free of the town. Never again would she be caught unawares, had it not been dangerous to walk in her small village. There were no more lights to guide her way, and only a small slice of a moon. Her feet were beginning to ache, and she had probably only trudged a mile or two. How would she get all the way to Amelia? Not that she could simply arrive on Amelia's doorstep and expect an open welcome, but she knew she would help somehow. Meg needed to know her sister was happy. At least the man Amelia had been sold to would not take her to a faraway land.
"Can I help you, miss?"
Meg jumped with fright. Not again. The older man held up his hands.
"I mean you no harm, but a young lady shouldn't be out here on her own in the middle of the night."
"You are correct, sir,"
She had to think of a plausible story, but there really was not one.
"Are you trying to run away?" he asked kindly.
"I suppose I am, in a manner of speaking. I was to be forced into a bad situation."
She was afraid to say more. He was most likely about to drag her back to town, thinking her an errant wife.
"Where are you headed, then?"
If only Meg could remember the name. She only knew it was near Oxford, since her uncle had listed the large estate as one of the Earl's qualities.
"North."
"I take a cart towards Basingstoke in the morning, if you don't mind the rough ride. You could catch the stage from there."
"I would be most grateful, sir."
"Come, get out of the cold. The missus will look after you."
He indicated a small cottage sat behind a hedge that she had not noticed from the road. He seemed genuinely concerned and was old enough to be her father. Hopefully she was not walking into another trap. Her parents would be turning in their graves. They had trusted Uncle Irving to look after Amelia and her. Instead, he had sold both of them to the highest bidders. She would rather leave the life of luxury to which she was accustomed than submit to the odious American merchant who was taking her away from her sister and everything she held dear. She may never have that back, but at least she could ensure her sister was safe.
"I'm coming to you, Amelia,"
she whispered. The man showed Meg into the small, sparse cottage, which looked to be no more than two rooms. A small kitchen with a table was at one end, and two rocking chairs flanked the stone hearth at the other. A plump matron hurried into the room through a door leading from the kitchen, and after a brief explanation from her husband, began to fuss over her visitor.
"So this is what the dogs were barking about. Are you Mistress Simpson?"
she said kindly.
"Are you lost?"
"Not precisely, ma'am. I am travelling north."
"At this time of night?"
She frowned, and doubtless saw more than Meg was comfortable with.
"You can go no further tonight, miss. You look done for. Sam, put the lady in our room, and I will make up some pallets here for us."
"Please do not do that, ma'am. I will take the pallet. I am most grateful for your hospitality."
She clucked with her tongue.
"It's nothing but what any good Christian would do. I'd want someone to do the same for our girls when they were young."
Sam walked in with a few worn quilts and a pillow, and in no time Meg was left to her bed in front of the fire. She would not have thought she could sleep in such a way, but she was so very tired. Her hand clutched the handkerchief she had forgotten to leave behind, the one small token she held from her handsome rescuer. Unfurling it, she fingered the beautifully monogrammed W, hoping her saviour was well. She fell asleep, listening to the dull ticking of an old carriage clock on the shelf above the fire, and heard nothing more until woken by the sounds of Mistress Simpson preparing breakfast and the smell of bread baking.
"Good morning, miss. Sorry to wake you, but you best be breaking your fast. My Samuel needs to be off soon."
"Yes, of course."
Meg rose and folded the blankets into a neat bundle. Having wrapped her tangled plait into a knot, she tried to brush the wrinkles from her ruined gown. It was hopeless. The mistress set a bowl of porridge before her and worried over her in the same way her old nurse had done.
"I know it is none of my business, miss, but I cannot like you going off alone. It would be clear to a widgeon you are a fine lady."
Meg had to laugh at this pronouncement. Her only gown was ruined from the filthy channel water, while her hair stank and was hopelessly tangled.
"No longer, I am afraid. Did someone take advantage of you? I can see someone at least tried to hurt you."
Meg's hand flew to the bruise she knew marked her face. She could feel the others elsewhere. The soldier had almost been too late. A few more moments.
"It is of no matter now. I must go to my sister. I wish me and Sam could do more. You have been very kind, ma'am. You have a place to go."
Meg could not lie to this woman. She would see straight through it.
"I do not, but I hope to find a position near my sister. We were separated by very bad circumstances."
"Do you know where your sister is?"
Meg shook her head.
"Only that his family seat is near Oxford."
"That is far away indeed."
She whistled low and kept working. Grateful for the food, Meg finished her porridge and tidied herself as best she could in the circumstances. As she went out to the cart where Mr. Simpson was loading his goods for market, Mrs. Simpson came to her with a small basket of food.
"My Samuel will take you to my sister in Basingstoke. Mayhap she can arrange for you to travel further with someone safe."
"Oh, Mrs. Simpson, I cannot accept this."
"And I cannot accept you going off on your own. I'll hear no more of it."
Meg gave her a swift hug.
"I will never forget you, ma'am. Thank you for keeping my secret.
She dropped a graceful curtsy to the good wife as she would to any lady, causing Mrs. Simpson to blush. She smiled, and pulling her hood low, climbed into the cart, hoping people would only see what they expected to see. Riding in a cart was slow and tedious, even more so than a carriage. However, Meg was extremely grateful, for she needed to conserve the few coins she had. It took 2 long days to reach Basingstoke, stopping at Petersfield en route to deliver some of the goods. They slept in the barn of one of Mr. Simpson's patrons, where Meg was thankful to be given her own stall. Hoping she had not displaced anyone, she nestled down on some sweet-smelling hay with the blanket provided. It was not what she was used to, but again, she was tired enough to sleep. A tabby cat joined her at some point during the night and was snuggled at her feet when she woke. She had a great deal of time to think during the long days of riding in the cart, as Mr. Simpson was not prone to excessive conversation, which suited Meg very well. It was hard to hide her worry, but at least she had a short reprieve. For one thing, her looks were very distinguishable. If only she had mousy hair and plain eyes. Besides concerns about being recognized, it could cause trouble for her sister.
"You mentioned the stage can be caught from Basingstoke, sir?"
she asked, almost thinking out loud.
"Yes, miss. The missus' sister runs the Maidenhead posting house, and the stage goes through there twice a week."
She nodded, her thoughts in a whirl, wondering if she might have enough coins for a ticket on the stage and perhaps another dress. She would need to find an employment agency to help her secure a position. References. Raised to run a grand house, she knew that without experience she must have someone to vouch for her. She could forge such a thing if only she had pen and paper. Things she had once taken for granted must now be considered very dear to a slim purse. There was nothing for it. She would have to beg kindness of Mrs. Simpson's sister. Besides having no pen and paper, she also had very few skills which would be attractive to a grand household. The only thing she could probably do without training was be a housekeeper, a position not easy to come by even if she were older and less remarkable in appearance. She did not mean that in a conceited way, she mused honestly, but it was part of the reason her parents had kept Amelia and herself so sheltered in Humberside. Last evening's attack made her realize just how naive she had been. Her thoughts flashed back to her rescuer, hoping he endured no lasting harm from his brave actions on her behalf. Saying a quick prayer for his swift recovery, she tried not to allow her thoughts to linger on the handsome face and midnight eyes which she had callously left behind. Chapter 2. Luke woke the next morning with a pounding headache. He tried to sit up, but he felt a ripping pain in his thigh. He had thought his injuries were improving. Had a piece of shrapnel become dislodged during the night? The army sawbones had said that might happen, he recalled through a confused haze. Was this a new wound, then? And why was he sleeping in his uniform? He did not remember getting into bed. He then recollected that Tobin had given him enough spirits to fell a small horse. He bellowed at his batman like a sergeant drilling raw recruits. "Where is the girl?" Tobin came into the room from the adjoining parlour and averted his eyes, which was unusual. "She is gone, Major." "Where did she go?" "I do not know." "You simply let her walk out of the door without ensuring she was all right? For goodness sake, she had been attacked."
"'Tis not precisely what occurred, Your Grace."
"Your Grace? What happened, Tobin?" he growled. Nothing ever good happened when Tobin started gracing him.
"She left out of the window while the Sawbones was here."
"The window?" he repeated with disbelief, looking over to the offending piece of architecture. "What time is it?"
7:30 of the morning," the batman replied sheepishly.
"Did you look for her?"
"She left a note." Tobin retrieved it from the small dressing table. Luke could not imagine what had possessed the girl to feel she needed to escape from here unless she feared harm from him as well. He blinked away some of the fog as Tobin returned and handed him the note.
"Coffee and toast, Tobin."
"Yes, Your Grace." He bowed and walked to the door. Luke called after him.
"If you call me that again, you can find yourself a new position."
Tobin turned around with a barely hidden smirk. "I am only practicing, Your Grace." He closed the door before Luke could hurl something at him. Diverted by the letter in his hand, he opened the paper. A fine gold locket fell into his lap.
"Kind sir, please forgive me for leaving in haste, but you appeared to be in better hands than mine. My presence would only cause further trouble. I must also beg your pardon for borrowing some money. Perhaps my locket will fetch part of their worth. I implore you to forget you ever saw me. I owe you my virtue, if not my life. You have my eternal gratitude. I have the honour to remain your obedient servant, Meg.
What the devil? Who are you, Meg? He wondered aloud, now more intrigued than ever. Perhaps he would have been able to forget her, perhaps not. It had been a brief glimpse he had caught of the face of an angel beneath the hood, yet the image filled his mind. Who was she hiding or running away from? She had been so helpless and afraid. Clearly she was in some kind of trouble to exchange her beautiful locket for whatever coins she had taken. This was worth far more than pocket change, and unless she had stolen it, indicated she was a lady of some means. He tried to recall anything he could of her, but his overriding impression was that she had smelled as though she had been dragged through a river. She had spoken very little. Her cloak had been of a quality material, but he had not seen her gown. Other than eyes so pale they were almost white and a few pale blonde wisps of hair, he knew nothing of her. Tobin returned with his coffee and some toast on a tray and placed it next to him on the bed. "There are some men in the taproom asking after some lady they say has went missing off their ship last night. Did you say anything to them?" Tobin gave a derisory laugh, clearly offended. "Of course not. I don't like the look of them." His Batman was more pretentious than Luke could ever pretend to be. "Did they say who she was?" "No, but I think she's in trouble," Tobin added. "She must be to climb out of the window. That's not an easy drop. She did tell everyone she was your sister. Not that they believed her, but will they be at telling these men about her?" There was a knock on the door. Luke cursed. Tobin opened it, and the innkeeper appeared in the gap, looking worried. "I suppose that answers the question," Tobin muttered, standing back to allow him to enter.
"There's two men who would like to speak with you in the tap room, sir,"
the innkeeper said nervously, before bowing himself out. Luke paused in the act of bringing a piece of toast to his mouth, trying to decide on the best approach. He could refuse to speak to the men, of course, but he wanted to know more and determine how much danger his Meg was in. He could delay his return to ducal affairs a few days longer, for he knew he would not be able to rest until he knew she was safe. As far as the rest of the world knew, he was still away at war. Before he had decided, Luke heard a scuffle outside the door.
"Let me in,"
someone bellowed. The innkeeper's protests were ignored as the door burst open. A man rushed in. He was dressed in dark superfine, but his stays creaked and his corpulent stomach was bulging out from beneath his puce waistcoat. Luke assessed him at a glance. New money, that much was clear.
"Mr. Thurgood,"
the innkeeper shouted in protest.
"Where is she?"
the odious man demanded. The small room was filled with the man's unwelcome presence. "Do you find charging into a gentleman's private rooms an effective approach in business?" Luke asked in his most repressive voice. Instead of apologizing with embarrassment, the intruder kept walking towards him.
"Where are you hiding her?" he demanded.
"Come no further, or this conversation is over." The man stopped. "Of whom do you speak?" Luke asked, acting bored. If only he had an eyeglass to hand so he might give him a proper set-down. If this was who Meg had run away from, Luke could not blame her in the least. However, if they were married, this man had the right to enforce her return. The thought made Luke's stomach sour. She had claimed to be a maiden still. Perhaps this man was abducting her for nefarious purposes. He had heard of young girls being sold in the Asian markets.
"My betrothed fell overboard from the Nancy Jane and has wandered off."
Luke raised an eyebrow. It normally had the desired effect when he waited for such persons to speak. He suspected she had jumped in a desperate effort to escape. She was lucky to have survived. It explained a great deal, like her odor, for one. "Are you quite certain she did not drift out to sea?" He could see the man waver. Clearly there was something fishy here, he thought wryly, as the man's eyes darted nervously back and forth. "I am afraid I have no knowledge of your betrothed, for I was attacked on the street last night and had to be tended by a doctor." He gestured toward his bandage. "I did not leave the room to enjoy any women last night." The man's face turned purple. Luke knew he should not goad the villain so, but the thought of him with his Meg made his tongue devilish.
"My betrothed is not a strumpet. I will have you know she comes from one of the best families in England."
"And which family would that be? We might be acquainted. In fact, I could make some inquiries."
The man narrowed his eyes. Not that it made a deal of difference. They were already beady, and he squinted. It was an unfortunate combination.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?